You know, we're kind of weather kind of slowed everyone down a little bit too, I think, this morning. In front of you should have notes for Lesson 91, O'Hareism, Under the Searchlight of the Word, is what we're going to be getting into here today. Some of you have been asking me what, you know, where the end's going to be on this, and I do have an end in mind, and where I'm going to end this is whenever we get through some of the more modern things that have happened within the last 20 years. But this history here is very important to kind of get a handle on. And before I really get rolling, Mike, did you bring the copies of O'Hareism?
Yes.
Can I have those, please? Thanks. Okay. So if you look at your notes, this is Lesson 91. And what I want to do primarily with this lesson is investigate some things about O'Hareism. Mike gave me 2 summers ago a copy of this booklet, and I photocopied it, which I have right here, and underlined and did things in it. And then he also told me that he had a second one that has, the only thing different about it is that it has the word second edition on the cover. So we'll talk more about that in a minute. But the main goal of what we're going to be doing is to look at this and some things that were being said about O'Hare that were critical of him, and look at some of those things. But if you look at your notes, 1920, I just want to establish, again, a little bit of a chronology here. 1920 is O'Hare's, in the words of Dale DeWitt, Indie Insight. Remember, this is when he becomes aware of he accepts a position about baptism that would include no water. 1923, O'Hare becomes pastor of the North Shore Congregational Church in July 1923. We learned last Sunday in 1925 that Bultima began to question water baptism. So I'll just abbreviate that. Baltimore begins to question water baptism. Then we saw that in February of 1929, DeHaan leaves the Reformed Church and establishes Calvary Undenominational Church here in Grand Rapids. We saw that in January 1930, that O'Hare speaks at the dedication of the Hans building. Speaks at Calvary Undenominational Church. O'Hare does that in January 1930. February 1930, O'Hare preaches at a conference at Calvary Undenominational Church. And then we've placed finally, the publication of Unscriptural Cathedrals, or UC, within late, so this is all in your notes, late 1930, early 1931. And by December of 1931, I'm already running out of room, so I should have probably done this differently, but oh well. He writes his epistle to Mr. Elbert Peteris, and he writes that, okay? You go on further, 1939, the Worldwide Grace Testimony is formed. 1941, O'Hare writes The Unsearchable Riches of Christ, which he comes out and blasts Acts 2 as faulty dispensationalism. And so we know that somewhere between late 1930, early 1931, and 1939, 40, 41, somewhere in there, O'Hare is leaving his Acts 2 position and beginning to officially espouse a new view, and that's one of the things that we're in the process of coming to, yeah.
Mike found another David source last night, at which point he still is an
Act 2 guy. And which one is?
1933.
That, yeah, that's not, which one is that?
That one. No much water.
Okay. I want to look at that when we're done. But that fits in this, that fits clearly in this chronology that we're establishing. By 1945, O'Hare writes The Accuser of the Brethren, which he states that DeHaan knew his position on water baptism during the late 1920s and early 1930s and was largely in agreement with him. So all of this means that the critical decade of change in O'Hare's thinking was the 1930s. Okay? So So between 1930-31, when Unscriptural Cathedral was written, and for sure before 1941, when he wrote The Unsearchable Riches of Christ, or quite possibly by 1939 with the founding of the Worldwide Grace Testimony, O'Hare's thinking underwent a monumental shift. Over the next few weeks, this is what we are going to attempt to nail down. When did O'Hare begin to change his mind, and what did the change look like? So the critical period is at least, and with Mike's statement here, now it's at least between 1933 and 1939 at the earliest. 1940 for sure, I think. 41 definitely. So the 1930s is the critical decade or time period of change within O'Hare's thinking. So that's somewhat of a review and somewhat of a position statement here about what we're going to be looking at now going into the 1930s. So if you would, go to page 2. Are there any questions, thoughts, or comments about point number 1? So that should mostly be reviewed, all right? So O'Hareism 1930. So that's this booklet right here. The booklet written by W. A. Hagee, pastor of Brookville Baptist Church in Brookville, Massachusetts, and endorsed by David Otis Fuller of Wealthy Street Baptist Temple in Grand Rapids, Michigan, titled O'Hareism, Under the Searchlight of the Word, first appeared in 1930. Now, let me finish this point and then I'll elaborate. According to Google Books and the online public access catalog, an electronic card catalog, the booklet saw 4 editions. So if you go to Google Books and if you go to this public access catalog and type in O'Hareism by Hagee and so on, it will list 4 editions, and it will also list that the original edition was printed in 1930. Okay? So, that's just point number 1, okay? This is also confirmed by the PhD dissertation of a guy named Adam O. Christmas, dated May 2011, entitled An Analysis and Evaluation of the Interpretations of J.C. O'Hare, Cornelius Stamm, and Charles Baker Concerning the Origin of the Church, Water Baptism, and the Commission of the Church. So there's a guy, in doing my research, I found this individual. He wrote his PhD dissertation, and this is all going to be linked to my website so you can get this. But he says he agrees with not only the online public access card catalog, but also the Google book listing, that this booklet, O'Hareism, originally dates from 1930. Okay? Also, we have other things along those lines. Look at the next point. The original publication date of 1930 is also confirmed by the fact that Hagee quotes or makes reference at least 8 times to O'Hare's The Great Blunder of the Church. So if you were to look at this booklet and analyze it, I'll find the one page in particular. This is a little bit flimsy, so I'll just use my photocopied edition, the same thing. On page, let me find it now, sorry. Multiple times throughout this, at least 8 times, he makes reference to the great blunder of the church. In fact, you can see right here, this is at the bottom of page 26, he's got a footnote that cites the great blunder of the church as where the quotation is coming from. Okay? Now, so that means that when Hagee is writing this pamphlet, O'Hareism, he is quoting from O'Hare's booklet, The Great Blunder of the Church. So let's go on with this point. As we saw in the previous lesson, The Great Blunder of the Church is advertised in the back of Unscriptural Cathedrals. So I have that with me again as well. If you look at Unscriptural Cathedrals, in the back of Unscriptural Cathedrals, there is an advertisement top and center of the page for The Great Blunder of the Church. Okay? So there are multiple sources that are indicating that O'Hareism was written in 1930. Okay? The booklet, Unscriptural Cathedrals, advertises The Great Blunder of the Church. Okay? This booklet, which dates, again, this is Have You Received the Spirit? Remember that this one dates from at least January 1st, 1929. This one does not advertise The Great Blunder of the Church. Okay? So, if our scriptural cathedral dates from late 1930, early 1931, which we talked about last time, and Mr. Haggai is quoting from the Great Blunder of the Church, and there are multiple sources that say that it was written in 1930, I think we can be pretty clear and confident in saying that the original edition of O'Hareism by Haggai does in fact date from 1930. Let me finish the point here, then we'll take any questions. We further know from O'Hare's an epistle to Mr. Albert Peters, which is dated December 1, 1931, that Unscriptural Cathedrals was already in print when Mr. Peters was addressed. In addition to the Great Blunder of the Church, Pastor Haggai also cites from O'Hare's Seven Questions About Water Baptism, which is advertised for sale in Have You Received the Spirit, which clearly dates from January 1, 1929. So all of that, I believe, establishes an original publication date for O'Hareism at sometime during 1930. Okay? Giving him enough time to have access to the Great Blunder of the Church, allowing him to quote from it at least 8 times. Now before we go, I know it's a lot of stuff, so before we go any further, any questions about that? Mike?
Well, besides being the longest title of any PhD dissertation I've ever seen, this man, Adam Crystal, what's his background?
He's a Baptist, and he's writing to criticize what he calls moderate ultra-dispensationalism.
Okay. Is it a seminary dissertation?
It's a seminary dissertation, yeah.
Do you know what school?
I do. It should be on the, is it on the back? Look in the...
Oh, okay.
It is for faculty, dissertation presented to the faculty of Piedmont Baptist College and Graduate School. Okay? Any other questions about those points? Now, point three now. For the sake of accuracy, we should also note that the Great Blunder of the Church also appears to have experienced a major revision at some point, I believe, after O'Hare changed his dispensational views. So you have to follow with me on this, okay? Now, a few weeks back, Mike gave me a copy, his copy of the Great Blunder of the Church, all right? I since have purchased the identical copy to the one that Mike gave me. So here's what I did. I took O'Hareism, I took the page numbers and the quotes that Haggai says that he is getting from the Great Blunder of the Church. Okay? I looked up every page looking for every quote that Haggai says he's making from this book and found none of them. None of them did I find. Okay? So if you take the pagination, the page numbers that are here, and the quotations that Haggai says he's getting verbatim with page number citations from the Great Blunder of the Church, they do not appear in this edition. All right? Now, so then you have to look a little bit further. And if you look a little bit further, this is the same edition Mike gave me, you'll see that advertised here are 12 helpful booklets, and he advertises a copy of Bible Study for Bereans from August 1935 to July 1936, and then also from August 1936 to July 1937. So whenever this edition of the Great Blunder of the Church was put out, it was put out at least after July 1937. So this is not an original edition of the Great Blunder of the Church. I went another step, okay? I got on the Berean Bible Society online O'Hare Library, and I opened up the PDF file for the Great Blunder of the Church, and I took all of the quotations from the Haggai booklet and electronically searched them just to make sure that I did not miss anything, and found none of them. Okay? When I searched for specific quotations that were found in this edition, they all appeared in the PDF that is on file with the Berean Bible Society. Okay? So that means we really only have two options here. Okay? Either Haggai totally fabricated information in writing this booklet in 1930, which I find highly unlikely that he would have done, especially if he is criticizing O'Hare's teaching and then making specific quotations and citations of his writing. That is unheard of to do that. it would immediately disqualify his booklet for anybody's consideration as far as what he's saying about criticizing O'Hare's teaching. So that's option one, which I don't find is very likely. Option B, which I find more likely, is the fact that O'Hare probably rewrote The Great Blunder of the Church at some point later and put out a different edition. Now, along with that, this edition has 70 pages in it. Okay? I also see on Google Books, if you search for The Great Blunder of the Church, an edition that has 80 pages in it is listed. So I think that what is the most logical explanation of what is going on here is that O'Hare rewrites The Great Blunder of the Church at some point later in his ministry, after at least 1937, when he has changed his mind. Okay? Because I find it highly... I just can't bring myself to think that Haggai would be that crazy, I guess, to just make stuff up and put it in the booklet. Now, maybe he was. I don't know. But anybody could have searched this out. So what I am still needing to find in my research to be complete is, number one, an original copy of O'Hareism from 1930. And number two, an original copy of The Great Blunder of the Church, which nobody that I know seems to have. Yeah.
Have you talked to DeWitt about that?
I have.
And he can't find anything either?
He agrees with my reasons for thinking that, and he is not in possession either of an original copy of The Great Blunder. So this is a piece that is eluding us at this point. Mike?
Do we have any other examples of O'Hare rewriting any of his booklets? I kind of agree with what you're saying, but I just don't know if his tendency was just to rewrite the same thing and give it a different title or something.
That's a good question. I don't know the direct answer to that. Although I see some motivation in him doing so, given the fact that this booklet is directly what? Attacking him. So that's my best explanation right now.
The red copy of that is the first edition.
No, I do not. And I'll tell you why in a minute. Yes.
Haggai was a Baptist?
Yes.
Where would his library be? What town was he in? And in what?
He was in Massachusetts.
Was he associated?
I don't know what school he was with, but he was in Massachusetts.
He became a pastor in upstate New York.
Lee?
The IFC published years ago a journal, IFCA journal, I'm not sure what the name of it was, but there were a lot of, in some of the old ones, a lot of articles that are attacking O'Hareism in the IFCA publication. Well, Voice, that's what it's called. IFCA Voice.
Voice.
That might be a source of...
Okay.
So there's been some of those old, they were still black and white journals.
The Voice?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me read the statement out of here. I kind of deviated from it just so everybody's clear. So I'm on point number three. For the sake of accuracy, we should also note that The Great Blunder of the Church also appears to experience a major revision after O'Hare changed his dispensational views. First, we have in front of us a copy of The Great Blunder of the Church that contains advertisements for the entire Bible study for Bereans magazine from August 1935 to July 1936, and then from August 1936 through July 1937. At the very least, this proves that The Great Blunder of the Church was reprinted at some point after its initial release. So here's what we know for sure. I see, it's clear to me that The Great Blunder had to at least been reprinted. Okay? And it went through at least a second edition as far as it being printed. Now, whether it went through a revision, a complete revision, that is the other piece to this discussion. Okay? Our reasons for this, of course, proves a second printing, but not necessarily a major revision. Our reasons for arguing that The Great Blunder of the Church underwent a major revision are as follows. When one compares the quotations from The Great Blunder of the Church made by Haggai in O'Hareism, they do not match. For example, on page 26 of O'Hareism, Haggai quotes the following from page 45 of The Great Blunder. quote, after that time, Acts 28:28, he never again became a Jew to the Jews or sanctioned any of the practices of Judaism, end quote. These words do not appear, however, on page 45 of the later copy of the Great Blunder of the Church that we have before us. In addition, we downloaded the PDF version of the Great Blunder of the Church from the O'Hare Online Library and searched the document in vain for the exact quotes that Haggai was attributing to O'Hare. This can mean only one of two things. One, Haggai misquoted and misrepresented O'Hare from the very beginning, which seems unlikely. Or two, O'Hare later substantially revised the work and then reprinted it. So I'm telling you that I tend to favor point number two here. I think I cannot in a million years bring myself to believe that Haggai, who's trying to convince people that O'Hare is wrong, would make such blatant mistakes and or fabrications. I just can't bring myself to believe that, unless he's totally careless and doesn't care any at all about, you know, accurately representing Mr. O'Hare. Yeah.
But wouldn't it be almost equally dishonest to revise and put into print something that doesn't include the quote after the fact and not make mention of that it's a complete revision?
Well, I see where you're going with that, and I wouldn't totally disagree with that. Okay. Obviously,
but that's a pretty big.
I don't disagree with that, Ronnie. I've thought about that too. I think that if you are sparring with someone intellectually, you need to be fair.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not focused so much on, at least I wasn't so yet on whether or not O'Hare was right in doing what he did, as much as I was getting to the bottom of what's going on here with the O'Hara's and booklet with relationship to the Great Blunder. But I do see your point. So I think it is more likely, based on these reasons, that O'Hare, when he reprinted the booklet at some point later, also revised the entire thing. Okay? I say that for these reasons here, plus the listing in Google Books of a copy of the Great Blunder of the Church that is showing 80 pages, not 70 pages.
Can't you buy that?
It's not for sale. Nobody's selling it. I've looked everywhere trying to find it. I even thought when I ordered this one at first that I had it, and then I got it, and I'm like, oh, man, that's not what I want.
Does Haggai have a biographer or anybody doing this type of work on him?
Not that I'm aware of. I've searched Haggai too, and he's not very prevalent as far as that goes. So,
who's that modern guy that quotes him all the time? I thought
there was some modern book that quotes him. So let's go now to the last page. So the copy of O'Hareism that the Grace History Project possesses is not a first edition. Okay, now here, let me explain this. When Mike first gave me this, he gave me this red one. Alright? So if I hold up the photocopy, you can see that it says nothing about it being a second edition on the cover. Does everybody see that? Okay? So then if you look at this one, you'll see that everything is the same here, except this one says second edition on the cover and this one does not. Does everybody see that? Okay? So I don't believe that either one of these is a first edition. Let me tell you why. Look at the next point. The copy that the Grace History Project possesses is not a first edition because it makes reference to an article written by the late president of Moody Bible Institute and editor-in-chief of Moody Monthly, Dr. James M. Gray. Since James M. Gray died on September 21, 1935, our edition must have been written subsequent to his death. So let me read that to you. Right here in the introduction, it says the following. It says, the late president of Moody Bible Institute, editor-in-chief of Moody Monthly.
Is that in the second edition?
That is also verbatim in the second edition. So I will read that to you just to do diligence and prove the point. Right here. The late president of Moody Bible Institute and editor-in-chief of Moody Monthly, Dr. James M. Gray. James M. Gray dies this September, go back to my notes now, September 21st, 1935. So, this edition, the one that is marked second edition, as well as this red one that does not say second edition, neither one of these are first editions, because they are written at least, the earliest they could have been written is October 1935, because they make reference to the death of the late Dr. James M. Gray, who died in late September 1935. Is everybody with that? So neither one of these copies that Mike has can be the first edition. Let's read on. Therefore, it must date from at least October 1935, as I just said. After examining the document, the Grace History Project believes that whatever differences exist between the four editions of O'Harism reside in the introductory material and not in the main body of the document. I think that whatever the differences that existed between the first and the second edition, I tend to think that they are mostly and mainly limited to whatever the introductory materials are here. Because the introductory materials make reference to the fact that James M. Gray has died, and I think these are things are added later to at least the second edition, as we can prove from what we have in our possession. Does that make sense? So I don't think, and this again has to still be proved 100%, but the main text of the booklet I don't think is any different, because he is still making the quotations from the works by O'Hare that date from 1930 and earlier. Okay? So, now that I've spent 20 minutes doing that, any questions about that?
So you're saying that Hegyi did not actually revise his essay. He just, in subsequent editions, put in an introduction.
Correct.
And explanations by different guys.
Correct. That's
But you think that O'Hare did revise.
Yes, the great blunder of the church.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, if you are, so here's what we need. Here's what we are lacking, and here's where DeWitt and I are in 100% agreement. We need to find an original copy of O'Harism, and we also need to find an original copy of The Great Blunder of the Church. But I think that when those are eventually found, which I believe they probably will be, it's probably on someone's bookshelf somewhere, that this will prove to be what actually happened. Okay? So, The copy in front of us contains three sections before the main text of the document begins. Alright? These sections include, number one, an introduction by David Otis Fuller endorsing the booklet. Number two, they include a word of explanation by the author, i.e. Hegyi. And number three, they include a section called What is O'Harism? Now listen, a section comprised largely of allusions to Dr. James M. Gray's February 1933 article in Moody Monthly titled Dispensationalism Running Wild. So these comments here, I'm just going to use this one because it's easier. It's a photocopy. They're both the same. It says, the late president of Moody Bible Institute and editor-in-chief of Moody Monthly, Dr. James M. Gray, called it Dispensationalism Running Wild, parentheses, issue, February 1933, page 253. So this is also making reference to an article that was written by James M. Gray that first appeared in Moody Monthly Magazine in February 1933. Which again would mean there's no way that information could have been in the original edition if it really did in fact appear in 1930. Because it's information that did not exist in print until February 1933. Coupled with the fact that that it makes reference to the death of the late James M. Gray, who died September 1935. I should also point out to you something that I have learned since I typed these notes, and that is the following. In the Accuser of the Brethren, which dates from 1945, O'Hare talks about having on his desk a copy of O'Harism that is marked second edition. this one right here. Okay? Now, is everybody following this? It's a lot of stuff here. What we are doing here, this is like real history stuff. I mean, we are really getting into the nitty-gritty here to figure out what's going on. All right? So before we go to the next point, does anybody have any questions? Mike?
We talked about this booklet a little bit last week. This has no help?
I'm going to talk about that one in a minute.
Talk about that.
So, in Haggai's portion of the introduction, he states the following about the name of the booklet and why he decided to write it. In addition, it also proves that Congregational had already been dropped from the name of O'Hare's Church before 1930. So let's read the quote. The name of this booklet was decided upon after much consideration. Some of the brethren call this erroneous doctrine Bullingerism instead of O'Hareism. But the latter is our judgment. In our judgment, is the correct name for two reasons. First, Mr. J.C. O'Hare, pastor of North Shore Church of Chicago, has claimed repeatedly that he did not get his teaching from the books of Mr. Bullinger, but from his own study. Notice in the quote that he does not refer to North Shore Congregational Church. He refers simply to what? North Shore Church. Secondly, it was Mr. O'Hare who has, by books, radio, and meetings, done all he could to popularize this error, especially in the camp of the fundamentalists. Mr. J.C. O'Hare felt called of God to refute modern isms, but his uncontrolled zeal made him overstep the bounds, and he has been propagating a pernicious doctrine which has caused confusion and division among believers. This paper is written for the sake of those who are honest seekers of the truth, as taught in the Word, with the hope that their eyes may be opened to the plain preaching of the Scriptures, and that their hearts may be warmed by heeding its simplicity. For in my judgment, the greatest evidence of the error of this doctrine is that it insinuates itself into the mind of the adherent and aggregates unto itself the position of, quote, a key to the Scripture. Whether the propagator knows it or not, that they make the Bible appear worthless unless it is entered into with this key. It is well-known fact that keys lock as well as open, and my personal experience of this error convinces me that it is a key that locks the Word and does not open it. Now, I have a couple things here. Okay? If this dates from 1930, okay, why is he calling O'Hare's doctrine Bullingerism in the first paragraph? Because we already know that as of 1930, O'Hare is still saying that the church started when? In Acts 2. Okay? So I don't think that fits with the first edition. Coupled with that, the existence, and we'll study this book in a few weeks, when H.A. Ironside wrote Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth, he writes that in early 1935. You take into account the fact, and he talks about Bullingerism and ultra-dispensationalism and all that sort of thing. So it doesn't make total sense to me that these introductory comments would necessarily be found in the first edition, which again leads me to say that I think that these comments are added possibly later to the second edition and they did not appear in the first. Because it seems to me that as of night, we've already proven by O'Hare's own pen that as of late 1930, early 1931, he is still saying that he's always believed and taught that the church began when. So the only thing that O'Hare would be teaching at this point that would be really in line with, quote, calling him a Bullingerite is the issue of no water baptism. Yeah?
I would not make much of his calling the church in Chicago Chicago North Shore Church, because throughout my life I've heard people drop the name of denominations when referring to their church. Fuller Avenue Christian Reformed Church up the street from me, of which my former father-in-law was a charter member, was called by the people that are a part of that organization Fuller Church, simply Fuller Church, always. Just Fuller Church.
Yeah,
and
that's
fine. Where I work, they dropped the denomination from the name of their church.
I just know from, if you read the Peter's book, the booklet, he's saying that he's already talking about why he disassociated himself with denominationalism.
Okay.
So that's, I say that not just based on that alone, but by other things that he said. So the section of the introduction titled "What is O'Harism?" offers the following explanation of the heresy. So we're still in the introduction now. O'Harism is a new garment for the older heresy of Bullingerism, so called as being purely and solely the innovation or discovery of the late Dr. E.W. Bullinger, an Anglican clergyman of great ability, possessing varied gifts and a penchant for discussing Holy Scripture.
Dissecting.
My mistake. Then here it is. The late president of Moody Bible Institute and editor-in-chief of Moody Monthly, Dr. James M. Gray, called it dispensationalism running wild. Issue of February 1933, page 253. It teaches that the church, as the body of Christ, was revealed to Paul only and not to the rest of the apostles. It teaches that the gospel which Peter and the 11 preached was a gospel of mixture and not the unmixed gospel preached by Paul. It teaches that the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Acts, as far as Acts 28:28, are not for this dispensation or the church of Christ. It teaches that the Great Commission is not for this dispensation. It teaches that the so-called prison epistles, namely Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, and Philemon, and these only of Paul's epistles are for this dispensation. It teaches that the epistles of James, Peter, and Jude are not for this dispensation. It teaches that repentance is not for this dispensation. The Gentiles need not repent, just believe. It teaches that the ordinance of baptism, and some include the Lord's Supper also, is not for this dispensation. So again, that is all from this section right here about what is O'Harism.
And that's in the introduction.
And that is in the introduction still. Yes.
He's clearly misrepresenting.
Misrepresenting who?
O'Hara.
Lee, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I'm telling you right now, this is way more complex than I ever thought it was. Okay? Because when O'Hare realizes, I hesitate to say too much right now because I don't want to, I'll just say it like this. When O'Hare realizes that Acts 2 is wrong, he does gravitate for a time towards Acts 28. And I think I can prove that in his writings. Okay? So these accusations of him being a Bullingerite are not totally unfounded, okay, for a time, but you have to put them in their appropriate historical context. It doesn't make sense for him to be being called a Bullingerite in late 1930, early 1931, but later on, there's a reason. I never understood why Stamm and O'Hare reacted so harshly against Ironside wrongly dividing the word of truth. Because when I would read Ironside wrongly dividing the word of truth, it sounded like he's attacking Acts 28 Bullinger right, dispensationalism, not mid-Acts dispensationalism espoused by Stamm and O'Hare. But it's not that easy, because I will show you in a few weeks when we are done with this analysis that in fact O'Hare is making Acts statements that have very much in common with Acts 28 view. Okay? I hate to just say that without having in front of me the proof for why I'm saying that. So for the time being, I suppose you're just going to have to trust me that there's a reason why I'm saying it. Okay? That I do intend to prove to you. So, any other questions about this?
When did Ironside write wrongly by?
1935.
Did he quote Haggai?
No. He did not.
Did he quote O'Hare? Or did he quote O'Hare's booklet that he
had? No. Nope. So where were we on the notes? I don't even remember. Oh. So, as we've already pointed out above, this section was probably added to one of the later additions to O'Hareism. In a letter dated March 1942, addressed to Judge David Otis Fuller, which is the thing you were just referring to, Mike, J.C. O'Hare included some quotations from his own personal correspondence with James M. Gray. According to these quotations, Dr. Gray was not thinking about Pastor O'Hare when he wrote Dispensationalism Running Wild. First one. Letter of Dr. James M. Gray to Pastor O'Hare, February 20, 1933. At present, however, you will be relieved to learn that in the writing of our editorial, Dispensationalism Running Wild, your name never came into mind. Personally, I have not associated you with Bollinger. Now, when is he writing that? February 1933. That booklet you have in front of you, Mike, what's the date on that one? That you, there's a green one there?
Oh.
That you showed me?
Which one?
Yeah.
33.
Okay, what month? Does that have a month?
March.
So, well, James M. Gray writes an article, Dispensationalism Running Wild. He corresponds with O'Hare and he says to him in February 1933, I didn't have you in mind when I wrote this article. Now, why would he not have him in mind when he wrote the article? Because Mike has proof here in this booklet in March 1933 that O'Hare is still saying the church started when?
Acts 2.
Everybody with that? Let me finish this and we'll take any questions. Second, letter of Dr. James M. Gray to Pastor O'Hare, dated March 21st, 1933. Yes, I am reading. And with much interest, your booklet, Much Little No Water, which is that one right there, is it not, Mike?
Yes,
I am reading with much interest your booklet, Much Little No Water, and although I do not go all the way with you, I regard it as a fine piece of exegesis. Your fault is, if you will forgive me, that you are too intense. So, he's saying, I'm mostly in agreement with what you're saying here. And then thirdly, the letter of Dr. James M. Gray to Pastor O'Hare dated March 27, 1933. Coming now to the question of your teaching about baptism, you are not to be condemned, but contrarywise commended, if you believe it is true. But on the other hand, you should expect opposition from those who do not agree with you, and yet whose motive is entitled to equal respect. So if you read these quotes, this correspondence now, that's dating from February and March 1933 between James M. Gray and between O'Hare, you don't pick up O'Hare. James M. Gray says that he does not view O'Hare as a Bollingerite. Did he not? Okay? Why? Because he's still in 1933, in March 1933, teaching that the church began where? Acts 2. Okay? So now we're even closer. So now we know that he had to change his mind at some point between 1933 and 1939, 41, somewhere in there. So the window, what's happening to the window here when he changed his mind? It's getting smaller. Okay? Now, I'm going to show you next week that in 1933 is the year that the baptism controversy erupted in force. Okay? Now, Lee, you had your hand up. And
yes, I was just going to point out that Otis Fuller was never a judge. But that's O'Hare, that sarcasm on the part of O'Hare. And so he was not a judge. I have, in fact, I knew that personally because I sat there, I sat in his home and visited with him. And that's when he told me that was O'Hare being sarcastic.
Yeah. So, we're probably only going to have time to finish this point. And so, as early as 1933, James M. Gray did not associate O'Hare's views with those of Dr. Bollinger. So any allusion to the writings of James M. Gray and the introduction to O'Hareism were added after the death, after Gray's death in 1935, and thereby cloud the historical context in which O'Hareism was originally written. Okay? When the booklet first appeared in 1930, O'Hare was still holding a traditional Acts 2 view about when the church began. It is imperative, then, that O'Hareism be read in its proper historical context. Given these historical factors, O'Hareism is a critique of O'Hare's early thinking before he had even officially abandoned his belief that the church began at Pentecost. Consequently, one needs to read O'Hareism with these factors in mind and not infer more into the booklet than what is actually stated. Now, if you read the booklet, he says, O'Haggai says nothing about O'Hare's view about when the church, he never criticizes him about when the church began. So you think, well, if he's critiquing O'Hareism, wouldn't you think that he would have made a big point about the church not beginning, O'Hare's teaching that the church didn't begin in Acts 2 and everything else? The reason it's not there is because when he originally wrote the booklet, O'Hare was still teaching that the church started when? Acts 2. So all of these things have to be lined up and read now within the context of what is going on in the history. Because when I first read O'Hareism, I read it and I inferred things into my reading of it that were not being explicitly stated, okay? Because I didn't know where it fit into the history. Now that I know where it fits into the history, I can read it and I can see, yes, what he's saying here as of 1930 makes sense that he is critiquing here O'Hare's early thinking, okay? Now, we haven't even gotten yet to the discussion of the text of the booklet, and we're going to have to do that next time and probably selectively, even more selectively than what I have here in the notes, because I do not want to spend any more than one more week on this booklet. So we got 5 minutes. I've said a lot of stuff. I've asked you to track with me through a lot of dates and different things that have been going on. Are there any questions or comments about any of this material, Ronnie? It's probably been donated or distributed off amongst family members, but
could still be out there to do Wealthy Street Church.
That's a pretty little library. They didn't have anything of theological consequence in it.
What two original books are you looking for?
The two that I need are, I need the original copy of O'Hareism, and I also need the original copy of The Great Blunder of the Church.
Well, have you looked out at Cornerstone?
I have not had time, so if one of you has time, help me out and go look. If they had it anywhere, they would have it at the seminary across the pond, probably. I've looked at Baker Bookhouse. The other place I have not had time to go there would be Grace Bible College. They might have originals of these. If they do, I have not found them. Okay. So yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
There seemed to be a lot of latitude at that time about what you believe in dispensational beliefs. Dr. Gray, President Moody, is in principle saying he does not believe the Great Commission is our commission today. That would never be in modern day Moody Bible Institute to today. And it seems like it's the brethren who were writing these booklets. I've got a number of them in my library about Bollingerism. They coined the term and just attacked him constantly about that. So you were kind of lucky. Anybody who taught anything extreme was in dispensationalism was lumped as a Bollingerite. I'm
that kind of language is uncommon in those days.
And the fact that, and that makes sense too when you think about the fact that Ironside was a Plymouth, originally a Plymouth Brethren guy, and he writes a history of the Plymouth Brethren. So he would no doubt have been exposed to all of that type of literature.
And then the other thing is, Fuller and Hagee are fundamentalist Baptists, so water baptism is their mantra.
I think, Mike, what I see emerging here is two different attacks on O'Hare. One from in the Baptistic circles, and the other from within the IFCA circle. I think the attack from the IFCA circle is fundamentally begun because he changes his Acts 2 view. And I think the other attack coming from the Baptist circles is all about the water baptism, and that's primarily what this booklet is about, the baptism issue.
The other thing, David Otis Fuller wasn't as dispensational as people seem to think. He would go along with the Scofield Bible, but most of those guys were just premillennial and confined their dispensationalism to eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else.
Yeah, thanks for that point. So, as of 1933, O'Hare is still teaching what?
Acts 2.
Okay? Gray says in his correspondence from February and March 1933, I wasn't thinking about you when I wrote this essay about dispensationalism running wild, and I've never associated you with Bollingerism. Okay? I think that I have proven, at least to my satisfaction, that there are things in these second editions that had them been added later that would not have been in the first edition in 1930. So I think that we've established at least something. The thing that remains yet to do is to look at what is he criticizing O'Hare about in the booklet, and that's what we'll focus our attention on next time. So are there any other questions or comments? I don't know if you guys realize what we're doing here, but we are establishing, possibly for the first time, an orderly chronological understanding of some of these things that have previously not had we've not had clarity on. So, well, I appreciate your attention. It's 10 o'clock. Unless there are other questions or comments, we'll just be dismissed. Bring this back next time, because I want to finish this, and then there'll be more that goes with this, and I'm going to kind of go through and highlight what I want to talk about out of it. So, thanks for your attention.